We've all got scars, some on the outside and some on the inside. But we can't be defined by our scars. I've spoken with some extraordinary people about how they've become empowered by their scars. This is I've Got Scars, Baby.
I embrace my neighborhood like Pablo, the block though. No canvas, just spray paint stolen from out of Costco. A lot though. Landscape full of my models and broken bottles. All I need is a wall for my Picasso and voila! Street graffiti at its finest. Calligraphy bolstering a lack of humility. But why? It's because expression isn't passive aggressive. It's obsessive. It's possessive. It's letting people know you count. Psst, I was here. And all I know is nobody else better touch this wall. This wall. Mexico couldn't pay for this. Hieroglyphics, scripting, and acrylics that never seem to survive weather conditions. It's erasing in the sun and low rain. Hands buried in soap and water to remove the residue. Oh, y'all don't hear me. I said it's a raisin in the sun. Lorraine, Hansberry, I play right next to the places I grew. Ooh, they'll go to Boys in Blue. Unmarked, hoping to catch a vandal. D-Tech commandos go Rambo on anyone looking to tag a bando. So shh. Y'all watch which way that van go while I paint this van go. Last night, little Ayana became a candle. Shot off a bicycle riding across 105th. Killed in a crossfire involving some Crips. And for what? I just want to express my condolences. RIP. Don't erase that.
So I'm so excited right now. Because I have sitting across from me an incredibly awesome actor, writer. He is also the producer of A. Lorna May's Design Productions. And he is Scott St. Patrick. Hello. Yes, you hear the crowd? Yes. Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to have you here and to speak with you.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
I remember meeting you, and it's where also I remember at the shout out to Tammy Mack for Tammy Mack's microphone mixer, because that was an awesome platform for incredible artists. And I remember seeing you like doing a monologue, and it was so okay. I just have to say, you stop acting all shy, because that's just what you do. This is what you do. I would see you, and you would stand like over like by the side of the stage, off in the corner somewhere. Yeah. And you would just be really quiet. And then like you come up to you, and you might, you know, say, you just say hello, and you're like, yes, how are you? How are you? And I'm just like, okay, so I guess maybe he's a little shy. I don't know. Maybe. And then you get on that stage. You get on that stage, and you, something comes out of you that you're like, what in the world? It's so powerful, and you command the whole room. And it's like 150, 200 people in there, and they are just glued on you. So that is the kind of actor that I'm speaking with right now.
Wow.
It's just what it is. It's what it is. I know that you know this. It's fine.
I need, like... I need you to go with me everywhere. It would be awesome.
But it's just true. You know, I don't like to gas people up, but when you come across someone that has a very honest and connective like gift, you know, I just want to speak to that and be really honest about it. So the energy that I received whenever I would watch you. And I'm just like, yeah, that brother is, yeah. Whoever picks him up, whatever show he's on, he is going to crush it. And that's, you know, and I still feel that way to this day.
I feel like, I feel like everybody who's an actor or a singer feels like that. They feel like, I'm special, I'm the best, and I have something to contribute to the world. Mm. I think everybody who's an actor or a singer feels like that. Or why would you do it?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're only doing it because you feel like you possess something that nobody else has.
Well, I can see that in you. You know, it's so funny. I feel like my experience was a bit different, though. Like, I
really?
Was just, yeah. I was like, I feel like I have something inside that's great. But then, like, the other part of me is just like, no, you don't. You're probably wrong. Like, it was,
of course.
It was weird.
Of course.
Like, I had both
yeah.
in my head at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the key is to drown out that protagonist, just quiet that voice more and more.
Yeah.
And go for yours.
Yeah, go for your own voice. Yeah. I had to. And I think there's just an element of like, hey, man, I'm just going to do the best I can at the end of the day. And that's just what it's going to be.
It's deeper than that. It's,
I mean,
deeper than
is
that.
It?
Yes.
Is it? Okay.
We're here.
Well, we are here.
Yes. You are like, there's something that everybody needs to hear that I have.
You know, it's interesting you said that, but as it pertains to this platform, mm-hmm. I feel like this platform is something that I felt was needed. Because it's something that I needed. It wasn't so much about me, though. It was more about, okay, I don't know if anybody else is going to do this, but maybe it popped up in my head for a reason because it needs to be done. And I think, you know, that's, I think, a message to anybody out there. If
yeah.
there's something that pops into your mind, like, man, that's a good idea. Like, it
yeah.
needs to be done. It's probably that kind of idea that's bigger than you. And so sometimes when you find an idea that's bigger than you, it's about, okay, guess what? I'm going to have to go do this.
It is. And it's interesting because you know that you have presence. You are in the world and you're here. And Schopenhauer, he wrote in The Will to Live, he wrote how it's your will. We all have a will.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it consciousness. Some
mm-hmm.
people, Heidegger called it Dasein. So spirit,
mm-hmm.
we're here. And because you have presence, there's something that drives you to a purpose or a goal, and you just continue pursuing that. And when what you think in your mind as a human being lines up with what you are designed to do, that purpose of Dasein, you excel.
And you get out there and you do it and you make it happen.
Absolutely.
So then I want to talk about the concept of making it happen and as you as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Making it happen. What happens when something happens that might possibly interrupt you making it happen? Because something like that was presented to you
yeah.
earlier this year.
Yes.
So can we talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can go in any direction. And I think it doesn't matter your profession or what that purpose is, mm-hmm. whatever it is that you believe you came into the world to do. There can be setbacks. There can be things, obstacles mm-hmm. That happen. And you can try to take things into your own power and say, I'm going to take control of this situation. Maybe I'll go in a different direction. But at the end of the day, your purpose, your will bring you right back in line with what the reason why you came here in the first place.
So what happened to you?
In January, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've heard of multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. We've heard of MS, but what is it really?
It's an autoimmune disease. Ultimately, what's happening is the body is fighting itself, and it's recognizing itself as an antibody. So it is looking to fight off something that's not there. And what happens is it leaves scarring. Mm-hmm. So like my optic nerve has been badly damaged because ultimately the myelin, which wraps around the nerves, all your nerves have myelin, a sheet of myelin that's on top of it. It's like the wiring mm-hmm. on your charger, what wraps around.
Mm.
And what's happening is the myelin is being destroyed. So that wiring is being destroyed.
Mm.
And it makes it harder for people, you know. The thing about MS is it affects neurons, and neurons is everything.
Yeah.
That's walking, that's seeing, that's smelling, that's neurons is everything. So it affects people differently. Some people it's movement, balance, you know. For others, it can be swallowing. Some people have trouble swallowing. Some people have trouble. I have a cousin who has trouble walking now because of MS. Mm. And has trouble feeling, you know, touching.
Sensation, okay.
Yeah. So it affects people differently. My case was aggressive. Because while a lot of optic neuritis, which is how your vision gets affected,
mm-hmm.
happens to a lot of people with MS, but ultimately what ends up happening is their vision comes back because although your optic nerve gets attacked, it doesn't get attacked so aggressively. Mm-hmm. Mine got attacked really aggressively.
Mm.
Yeah. I would say maybe a week, 2 weeks after I got the news about MS, I woke up and it was like somebody smeared Vaseline over my right eye. Like I woke up and I could not see through my right eye. It was yeah. If you can imagine just wearing glasses and somebody just smear Vaseline over the glasses, that's how it looked looking through my right eye. I was just like, what is going on? And I called my neurologist, and my neurologist was like, you need to go to the hospital.
Hmm.
And so they put me on fluids, and I was in there for 6 days. And
what was that like?
That was hard. It was hard. That was in February. And I told my mom, who is my everything, I told her, you know, in January when I found out that I had MS, and she was like, okay. And now it's February and I'm supposed to go see her and spend some time with her. And my neurologist is like, I bought the ticket, and my neurologist is like, yeah, so no, you need to be in that hospital for a little while. Mm. And so I had to call my mom and be like, so I'm not coming. Like, why? Mm-hmm. But, you know, as it was explained, like, this is how you start to get better. You need to be here so you can start the process of getting better. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Wow. So you were diagnosed with MS.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so one of the things that, you know, to look at you,
mm-hmm.
you know, as much as you want to play games, talking about you don't go to the gym, whatever, you be lifting buses, stop playing with your girl. It's fine. It's fine that you lift buses and I lift this and I'm exhausted. Okay, it's fine. But so to look at you, you know, mm-hmm. you're in shape, you are a beast at, you know, your craft. You know, you've had shows like Act God, like you've done all these things that you've created, mm-hmm. and people are looking at you and they're like, yo, like this brother's doing his thing. Like you're on this, on the verge.
Yeah.
And then you're diagnosed with MS.
Mm-hmm.
How has that affected you? Well, even before that, like, how did it start? Like, how did you know what you just kind of like, how does that develop? For you, how was it revealed, rather?
Well, I would say a little more than a year ago, I was the narrator in a play, and this is the night of the show. I am having trouble reading these lines, and then the light, like, you know how the narrators usually have a light, a lamp, goes out. So now it's dark and I'm trying to read this script.
Mm.
And I'm looking and I'm like, why does this look like Farsi? Like, I cannot read what is in front of me. Yeah. And the sun would be so bright. It would be like, soon as I pull out to go either to the 405 or the 101, if the sun is setting, you know, in the evening, then the light is just coming through my windshield. And I need to pull over because I'm just like, it is too bright.
Mm.
And if it's the morning, it's rising, then I'm same thing. I'm just like, the sun is just crazy bright.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started going to the doctor, and there was a doctor who was like, that sounds like MS. And I was like, what? No. Mm. And then eventually I went to a neurologist who was like, okay, let's get an MRI and we'll see. And then he was like, he got the results back. He was like, so it's highly suggestive of MS. And then I was like, wow. Okay, just give me the medicine. All I need is the medicine and I'll be well. Just give me the medicine and everything will be fine.
Yeah.
And so, wow, did I skip over? I feel like I'm being very long-winded right now.
No, you're perfect. Okay. This is perfect.
So I go for the medicine and I don't see any changes in my vision. Like, now at this point, like, I'm not driving and it is really hard for me to read. And I'm an avid reader.
Yeah.
So I was like, this, it didn't work. Like, is there, do I need a stronger dose? Like, what needs to happen so yeah. that I can get my vision back? And my neurologist was just like, yeah, so this isn't going to make you better. Like, your vision is going to be like that for the rest of your life. There's nothing that we can do. We just want to make sure it doesn't get worse. Mm. And that was like, that was the hardest thing to hear, because I was just like, what do you mean? Like, this is how I'm going to be seeing? Like, this is how I have to live now? And it was hard.
Wow.
Yeah.
Before you actually went to the doctor for your diagnosis and officially got a diagnosis, what was going on? Were there things, I know you had mentioned that you were reading a script and you couldn't really see it. Were there other things that, you know, you thought, what's happening? Something's off.
The sun.
The sun.
So bright. Like,
oh, wow.
It was just, it was just so bright. And one thing about MS, a lot of people have optic neuritis. What happens is the disease starts to eat at your optic nerve. And so, yeah, it was just like the sun was so bright. And not being able to read as much or as often as I was.
And I think you said something about, you mentioned before, something about your feet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say about, this was like 7 years ago, 6-7 years ago, I woke up and like both my feet were numb. I thought maybe I had like taken a supplement and maybe it didn't dissolve properly, so it was in my circulatory system.
Yeah.
So I was just like, I need to work out, get my heart moving and pump this thing through. I thought that's why my feet are numb. Something in my blood is like blocking something. So I started working out like
even more.
I was like, at night I would do sprints. I was like doing burpees. I was going crazy.
I've never thought exercise was the answer to things. I'm sorry. Does that sound terrible?
Yes.
Like, like, oh my God, my stomach hurts. Let me do some burpees. What?
I'm telling you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like, you know, if you're sick, you know, a lot of people will go to the gym and they'll work out and say, wow, I sweated it out or whatever.
Dang, I need to be one of those people.
No, but, you know, I should, at that time, I should have went to the doctor. Because it might have saved my vision. It might have saved my eyesight at that time.
So early diagnosis, they said when you finally did go, they said that was a part of
like, they were the like, onset. That was the start. Like, you should have came. That and was the start of it.
They could have done something at that point.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So what would you say to those people, dare I say maybe men especially, who don't like to go to the doctor?
Go to the doctor. Get some insurance.
Like, please have insurance.
Get insurance and go to the doctor as often as that insurance will allow. Because you just never know.
Yeah.
You never know. And the quicker that you can get on top of something, the better.
Yeah. Okay. You had these things that were happening.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you just go to the doctor at that moment? Like, what was the thing that was keeping you from going?
You know, I just thought, you know, things happen, you know, to us. And if you're not like the type of person who just goes to the doctor all the time, you just say, oh, this will pass. Like, I just need to do something and it'll pass. You like a cold.
Some burpees or something. Some yeah. Jacks.
I was just like, I just need to work out hard and somehow this will go away.
Oh,
I was
wow.
like, yeah. It was like,
were you okay? Was like a there sty. A little bit of oh yeah.
You know, you get a sty. You're just like oh.
I feel like so,
oh.
I feel like I probably have gone to the doctor for a sty.
Really,
like, I'm one of those people that's like, excuse me, my left toe twitched once. Like
really,
a little bit. I'm a wow. little bit like that. But yeah. So, do you feel though? You know, because you know. Vision issues and you know all of that kind of stuff, you know, you ignored the feet thing,
yeah,
but then you have the vision issues and you can't really read, and you're like, when you went to the doctor for those things, how long did it take you to actually go after you had those situations?
It's crazy because I went to two ophthalmologists. And they were like, your eyes are fine. They you know, dilated my pupils. They mm-hmm. looked in the eyeball because it was my optic nerve. So everything with my eyes looked
healthy.
Fine. Yeah.
Okay. So you went to the eye doctor.
I did. Yeah, too.
So then when did you go to the medical doctor?
I went. It's so interesting. I went to a neurologist after I went to the second eye doctor, and then I was talking to an actor and they were like, that sounds neurological. You need a neurologist. And I was like, oh, man, okay. Mm. All right. Then I went to a neurologist and a
was
really
it right good, away? Or did you wait a couple months?
It was a year.
Oh!
Because I went to two eye doctors.
And they said you're fine. So you're like, let me stick with that because it feels better, right?
Yeah. I mean, and we're talking about like months at a time in between.
So months in between the eye doctors. So you had this happening mm-hmm. and it might have taken you about 2 years. Maybe 2 years to
no,
get to the
like
actual
a,
neurologist?
It was like a year.
A year. Okay. Yeah. So it took you a year to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Did fear creep in at all? Did anything say to you, it could be a little more than
no.
what you think? No?
No.
It was just, okay.
I was just like, whatever it is, I'm going to be fine. I just need to know so I can move on, you
yeah.
know? Give me the medicine. What medicine do I take so this goes away? Even after I heard MS, I was just like, okay, I know there's people who get this
yeah.
thing and they're fine after they take the medicine. Give me the medicine. And then mm-hmm. at some point it was just like, no. It's like, no, this is the way it's going to be from now on.
Wow.
I was like, oh,
okay. Yeah. It was like, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. How has that affected you as an actor? Because, you know, you have to read a script. You have to, you know, I know that there's also some physical, like your hands and holding certain things.
Yeah.
Like, how's that affected you?
I think it makes it harder. You know, I feel like I was running in a race with a whole bunch of actors and writers. And I felt like God plucked me out of the race and put ankle weights on and then put me back in the race and was like, now run. And I'm running and I'm just looking at all these actors and writers just pass me by. It's like, and I'm like trying to keep up.
Mm.
But on the flip side, it was an opportunity to grow in consciousness.
Yeah.
Because it's not until something happens that is so hard that you realize that it's going to take more of you.
Yeah.
You know.
So before we even go there, because I'm just trying to, like, how limiting is this? Because you talk about, you know, you're an avid reader and you can't read, like, so can you technically still act? What do you have to do? What kind of accommodations do you need to make for yourself at this point?
That's a great question. It's not limiting. It just makes things difficult. So I can, you know, read and study and, you know, if I get an audition or something, I can go over it and go over it and go over it. But if you just hand me a script and go, oh, we want to change that line to this. Mm. And it's like a big paragraph or something like that, and I have to like come out and read something off a page, then yeah, it's gonna be hard.
Okay.
But I always relied on my memory.
Okay.
Ever since I started acting.
Yeah.
Because there was a young girl who was in a class with me, and it was a commercial class, and she just took this small like line and she just knew it. Like, they gave her the paper, she was like, I'm ready. And I was like, I need to step my game up.
Wow. Okay. So you got that lesson early.
I did.
So you were able to like now retain information a lot, you know, quicker than the average bear, so to speak.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have that. How has this, because you mentioned not being able to drive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, how has this, look, you're a guy, like you're a dude.
Yeah.
You're that, you know, alpha kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that feel at this point? Like, for real, for real. Like, not being able to drive, not being able to, you know, do whatever those things are that you used to do, like, whether you're going on dates and it's like, hey, you know, whatever the case is.
Yeah.
Like, how does that feel?
it's a part of my life now. But the understanding is that it's just going to take more will, more strength, more mind power, more concentration, you know, more positivity, more meditation, more being still. It's going to take all of that. I have to do that more. I have to be more positive, you know, whereas some people can just say, oh, I'm having a bad day and just, you know, let me just go to bed, or you might see them for a whole month and they'll be down.
Yeah.
Like for me, it's like, I don't have time to be down. I have to be strong.
Why do you feel like that?
Because it's like life or death, you know. I am so blessed and so grateful because I know this could have been so much worse. You know, I could really not be able to see. And even though it's mainly my right eye, every day, every moment, I have to wonder if my left eye is going to be like my right eye. Because if my left eye is, then I'm going to need a cane. you know what I'm saying? Like, then my story would be like, okay, how did Stevie do that? Because I need to know.
Yeah.
But I'm not there.
Yeah. So you're trying to just at this moment just be really grateful for where you are and what you have and so
forth. And strong. And use every available resource possible.
Did you have any regrets about not going when the foot numbing situation happened? Did you feel guilty at all about, because especially as a person that prides himself on his health and fitness and things like that. Was there a level of resentment that you had? Anger, frustration about what you might have contributed or not to this?
No. It wasn't even a, it was such a small thought. I probably would have thought about it like for a day or something. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you mean to tell me I would have saved my vision if I would have went to the doctor at that point?
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, no, I was supposed to, it was supposed to be like this. It was supposed to be hard, you know?
Mm.
And if I would have went to the doctor and I would have cured MS, just say, say I would have caught it when my feet were numb and I would have went to the doctor and they'd have been like, yeah, you have MS. Here's the medicine and then everything is fine. I would have walked away from that experience like, why'd that happen? What was the point of that?
Oh, so you, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we always think about that.
Yeah.
Could we think about, like, you know, as long as you get through it, okay, cool, whatever. And now you're off to doing the same thing you've been doing.
Right, right.
Yeah. So what do you think this experience is pulling out of you?
Strength, a greater understanding of life, and wisdom, you know, to, you know, just be still, you know, and just observe each moment.
Do you feel like the person you were before MS?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a cool guy, right? He had it together, right?
Yeah.
I mean, why did you need to improve on that? Why do you feel like there needed to be something different? Or do you feel like there needed to be something different? Or are you at a space where you're like, I see that this has served me in a good way? Do you see any benefit?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. There is no fear. There's no fear about anything. Like, I, it's just like my vision has changed.
Your vision changed so that your vision changed.
Okay,
I see
you
what
go.
You were doing. I see you.
I was.
Oh, you weren't.
I was all you.
Oh,
I was
so I
all you.
That? Okay. Dang.
No, I meant literally. Okay. Yeah, my vision. If you talk to like anybody, I can only imagine, because I know this is how I was before I, you know, developed this. It'd be like my vision's gonna change. Like, if you would have told me a year ago, your vision is going to change. Like, you're going to, I've been like, get the out of my face. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
No way. No way. Cause that would be awful. That would be the worst thing for my vision to go. Like, you tell me I'm not going to be able to drive. What? No, that's not going to happen. And then that happens. It's just like, what else? Bring what else? What's up?
Yeah.
Bring whatever.
Yeah. So it was another level of strength, because
without
you have the
doubt.
Physical strength, because you were already picking up buses and cars and stuff. So now it's like you can, you know, like you have this resilience.
Yes.
In a way you didn't have before.
Yes.
Okay. It's interesting. You talked about scarring.
Mm-hmm.
And that being what it is, and it's what popped in my head when you said that was, like, even with my scars, the reason why it's so prominent is because my skin keloids. So technically, my skin was just overreacting, trying to protect itself, protect me, so to speak, and so it created the scar tissue.
Yeah,
and you can see my scars. You know, you can see them because they're, you know, out there.
Mm-hmm.
But with you, when it comes to MS, you know, outside of you not being able to drive, you know, mm-hmm. outside of you maybe not, you know, having difficulty reading, people wouldn't necessarily know that you mm-hmm. have MS. You know, they see you and they're like, yeah, I can see that, you know, he can probably, you know, bench press everybody in this room. But they may not
There's
know.
There's a lot of people in this room.
Yes. See? A lot. See? So they can't see it. They can't see MS on you, so to speak. Is that the way you like it? Do you feel like you don't really want people to know? Do you feel, how do you feel about it?
I don't care. I really do not care. It's probably better if people do know. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like they would treat you differently, or people have treated you differently?
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. You know, MS for me was one of those things where I didn't know much about it until I got it. Mm-hmm. I thought that I did. You know, if you'd have asked me before I got it, like, you know about MS? I was, yeah, I know a little bit about it. Mm-hmm. But I think that the ignorance makes people kind of like, are you going to die? Like, what does that mean? You
yeah.
know? And it's such a thin line between health and, you know, these things that can happen that you really... you take it for granted, and you when you're dealing with people who have disability, you just think that'll never be me. Like,
yeah,
look at that person hunched over trying to cross the street. That will never happen to me ever. Yeah. I will never go through that. But
do you say they treat you differently, knowing that you have it? Do you feel like they try to coddle you at all, or they're like,
yeah,
oh,
there's some of that.
How does that feel?
I know what their intention is. Mm-hmm. And I always, if it happens a little bit too much, then I make a joke out of it just to bring awareness to it. I it's so funny because this was one of the blessings. I would have never understood this perspective or what people who have disabilities go through. But there is a thing that's called ableism, and mm-hmm. it's where people who don't have disabilities have a way of treating people who have disabilities, and it's kind of discriminatory. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like if there's a party, you know, you're not going to call your friend who has that disability. It's kind of like, no matter how good my friends are, it's still going to kind of be like, can he do that?
You know what I'm saying? Wow. So then they start to actually limit you without you saying, oh, this is an issue for me.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, even like when they look at my Instagram videos, it's like, should he be doing that? Like, that looks kind of dangerous without knowing anything about MS. So can he lift that much weight? Like, is that healthy? You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
So you go from being the guy that's, you know, everything's fine, everything's cool, yeah. I'm lifting the weight, doing my thing, and you see the videos, and then they're cheering you on, and then you announce to people, you let people know that you have MS, and now it's just like, oh my God, your body's gonna fall apart, and so now, you know, like now they... It's a different energy. It's nobody's really necessarily cheering you on. They're trying to hold your hand.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also trying to push it away, you know.
Like push away knowing that you have it? Or what do you mean?
Yeah, push it away like it's, you know, as Baldwin said, it's an unknown quantity and quality that I don't want to have anything to do with it because that's going to make me sad or it's going to bring my vibration down, you know, having to deal with it. Even my friends, you know, it's just kind of like, yeah, like, man, I need to call somebody. Who am I going to call? Scott? Oh, no. Dude, when he comes around, like, I just feel like things are so bad. Like, I'd rather not. Let's call somebody else.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that feel? Like, does it make you angry? Does it make you sad? Like,
no, I love being aware of it. I love being aware of it. When it happens, I love going, oh, you don't even know you're doing that.
And so that's what it is that there's a level of ignorance, so to speak, because they don't know that that's what they're doing. But what do you wish they would do?
That.
What, be honest?
No, I just love it because I learn when that happens. Like, I'm like, ooh, I wouldn't even have known that I could do that if I didn't have this. I probably would be doing the same thing to somebody else.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you're actually looking at it as like, gosh, being on this side of it is showing me my old self in essence.
Yeah, without a doubt. And people who, you know, if I was in a club,
yeah,
and I saw a guy who, I remember I used to see guys who were in wheelchairs, and I used to just think like, what is he expecting to do? No girl is going to go over there and mess with that guy. Like, man. And it would be, a little bit of it would be like, what a loser. Like, you're in a club in a wheelchair, bro. It's not going to happen. Forget about it. You're not even going to have a good time.
And it's like the level of arrogance to think that about another person because you don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And so now you're in a space where you're hearing that, you're feeling that. So if you were to say to anybody that you said is an ableist, what would you say to them? Just if you had to have a blanket statement from anybody who's in this position in for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Whatever disability, what would you say to them?
Okay. Are they in that camera right there?
They are wherever you want them to be, okay. Sure.
Listen, okay? I know you probably don't know that you are one. You probably don't even know that you are a part of this club, okay? But you are a bad person, okay? God. You're not good, okay? And I know that you don't know that you're doing this. You don't know that I'm talking to you, but I'm talking to you. And you need to change your ways so our society can function better, because it's better when there are people who are more understanding and more caring and more loving and give space for everyone to be themselves. Change your ways. Now we need you to do that so we can function better as a society. Okay.
How did that feel? I feel like you needed to get that off your chest.
I did. Yeah. Hey, disability power.
So when it comes to something like this, I'm always curious because I believe that men handle things a certain way and sometimes women handle things a certain way and it can differ. And a lot of times, you know, but like a lot of times women, we're taught, we're conditioned to be able to be down and cry and go talk to your yoga home girls and be like, oh my God, this happened and so on and so forth. Like, you know, we can do this.
This is real.
Like what it is. No, this is straight up. No, we're going to talk about it like it is. And so you're able to do that as a woman a lot of times, like it's socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. For a man, especially a man who, you know, like, you just, I don't know, what do I call that? You're from New York and you just like straight up, like, I don't, you know, I'm not, whatever. Like, you got tattoos on your neck right now. Like, come on, you're not just a pushover guy.
Get over it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is the kind of guy you are. So, as a man, and because you're speaking to also other men who are used to being the head of the household, used to hold it down, used to making sure that their family is good, who are used to this. And now a part of that is being taken from you. A part of your dream looks like it's being taken from you.
Yeah.
Where does that energy go? Where does that, the feelings, the emotions, where does that go for you? What do you do? Who do you talk to? How do you speak to someone like you without it being like, whoa, give me my space. I need a, you know what I'm saying? Like, how do you do that?
It's so interesting because I think the way that my studies and my concentration was going, it was preparing me for an event like this, like MS, or some life-changing thing. I was heavy into reading, you know, Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, Science of the Mind, The Alchemist. I was just The Power of Now. I was just so into that stuff. And I was just like, equanimity, like Dave Chappelle's show, equanimity, you know. And, you know, reading Seneca, you know, and Stoicism. And just knowing that the truly equanimous is good if things are up or things are down. And so my passion for pursuing that type of lifestyle led me to say, okay, so this normally to everybody would seem bad, but I'm going to look at this like it's an opportunity, and I'm more interested to see how it ends. It's like a movie. Yeah. I want to see, like, do I go on to do some amazing thing and like shock the world, like, oh my gosh, how did he do that with MS?
Yeah.
That's more where I'm at. I'm more interested to see what happens.
I think that's an amazing way to look at it.
Yeah.
Now, for those who may not necessarily, you know, read Deepak Chopra and, you know, Science of the Mind, for those who may not be in that space, but they see what looks like to be their world crumbling before their eyes, it seems to look like what could possibly be their manhood just kind of like falling by the wayside. Like, what would you say to that guy?
I would say yeah, it's time. Like, everything that you grew up thinking, that you grew up guessing, imagining about yourself, all the toughness that you looked at in comic books and cartoons and whatever, maybe your dad, it's your time now. It's your time to show that, you know, that toughness and that strength. Because bad times are kind of recrudescent. It's constant. And it depends on your perspective. And if you can level up and just look at the positivity in life, then you can know that bad things, quote unquote, are a consequence of being alive, being present, you know. And it's a video game. You don't have to fall to it. You just have to dust it off and keep going.
Okay. So first of all, I can't just totally bypass the fact that you said recrudescent. Did you just say that? Okay, here's the thing. Here's the good part is that I love that you translated yourself. He was like, recrudescent. Okay, let me translate that. And you just went in straight into it. Don't think I didn't catch that. I did. I did. And I'm grateful.
No, you know what? No, let me tell you. It doesn't matter where I'm at. I take every opportunity to use a word that either I memorized or that I saw. Mm-hmm. I just throw it out. Bleh. I just get it out because that's how I'm going to always remember it. The minute I stop saying it, it just goes into the black hole.
That's true. That's very true. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Yeah. Now I know a new word. That's fine. That's great. I'll see you over there. It's like, let me put Audra up on some game here. And okay. So, okay. So here's what I'm going to say. Okay. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like to the brother out there, and of course this can apply to sisters too, that if they're experiencing a certain setback, the way you started to interpret it is like, okay, this situation looks pretty crappy. So how can I maybe elevate myself, rise up spiritually, would you say, to handle this in a way that is healthy, I'll say. Is that what you mean?
That's close.
Is that close? No. He's like, absolutely close. Not. It's no,
close.
Close.
I'm kind of careful with how I use spiritually. Okay. Because for some people that means, one thing.
Okay.
That might mean something religious, a particular religion or something. But I'm more talking about just your human nature, your will, your umph.
Okay.
And your fight,
Yeah. But do you feel like you have to become a better person, so to speak? Like you've been presented with a challenge, just say a challenge, whatever that is. It could, it could be, all right, so the rent is due. The lights are about to get cut off. Go. What you gonna do about it? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so then, you have to kind of find something within yourself to say, okay, how can I, however possible, create whatever this is, however I need to kind of mold myself into being, but I need to become a person that can pay rent and this light bill stacked. I need to become that right now.
Yeah.
So you had to become a person that is an actor, that is a very powerful actor that has MS. And then you have to kind of, and then it's like, okay, go.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But isn't that, isn't that the fight, without MS? It's like.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's not really different because you have something that people can put a label on.
No.
It's just what everybody in life has to kind of deal with.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, but I think that's that's what this platform is really about, is just to really kind of talk about the simple fact that we all have something, some sort of challenge. It could be, I have not enough money, I have too much money. And or I had this experience or that experience. I've, been divorced. I've never been married or whatever the case may be. But it just all depends on how you look at the situation.
Yeah. I mean, setbacks are certainly ampliative, and they can light a fire under you, but just being, just existing, you're naturally going to have something that you're going after, even if it's nothing. You're still going after something. And so try to do, the hardest thing to do is to not do anything. But I believe everybody has something that they're trying to do.
Yeah. Okay. So with, I know that you and I have spoken before, and because of your limitations as far as reading and things like that, one of the things you talked about was the importance of audiobooks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. But I used to think, like, audiobooks, that's cheating. You didn't read that book. You did an audiobook. Like, no, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
And I had a conversation with a good friend of mine, and we were talking, and she was like, man, I need to, like, read some books because, like, I just need to get some knowledge inside of me. I just feel like I've been dead. I've been going out all the time. I was like, you should do some audiobooks. And she was like, yeah, but I don't know. I was like, do you think that those don't count? She was like, yeah, you know. I was like, wow, well, I pretty much rely on audiobooks. So
yeah.
She was like, Scott, you are mean.
Yes.
She's like, I didn't mean it like that.
Yeah. I mean, but it's interesting because, you know, I mean, of course you have, like, amazing platforms like Audible and things like that.
Yeah.
But you don't even think that there are some people that just can't physically read a book.
Oh, yeah.
And now this is something that can be a huge blessing in their life, because
Absolutely.
Now they can have the information and so on and so forth.
Absolutely. I would just, I think where I'm kind of different from the way I used to look at audiobooks is you really have to be dedicated to getting the knowledge out of the audiobook. You can't just put it on and drive, or put it on and start vacuuming, you know, because then you, like, walk away from that and it's like, I read that book. No, you didn't. Unless you really have great concentration. Like, you're, like, cooking dinner and you can really listen to an audiobook and get everything out of the audiobook.
Yeah.
You really have to be still and listen and treat it like you're reading a book.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is, you know, we don't always look at things like that, but it's, you just never know what kind of things are helping people.
Yeah.
So what do you feel at this point is the impact that you're looking to make on the world as an actor? Do you feel like it's different now than it was before?
That's a good question. Not really. I always felt like my purpose, was to draw people closer. Even by telling somebody else's story, just for somebody else to have knowledge of what somebody could possibly be feeling through acting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I portray this role, like we were talking about the Joker, like I feel like people are walking away and having a greater understanding of mental health. Sorry, guys. Spoiler alert. but, you know, It's like you because of your acting, like now you have a greater understanding of something. And has that changed because of MS? No. That's the reason why I started acting. But with MS, it's just a platform that's ready. It's right there. Like, hey, to anybody else who's dealing with MS, like, take it easy on them, everybody else. You know what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Yeah.
And support them, you know, because it's not easy at all.
And so do you feel like you've had the support that you need at this point?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. I have, like, the best friends, you know. New York is, like, home. Mm-hmm. And it's, I have so many people out there who I consider, like, they're my family. And the acting community out here is just, like, they're everywhere, you know. And it's always, hey, I'm just checking in, bro. You good? I appreciate that. I needed that.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What is, okay, in those moments, mm-hmm. when you say, I needed that, what is that moment like?
Well, this is me being totally transparent. I definitely had, in the beginning, I would say there were glimpses of suicidal thoughts, you know. But, you know, think about the actors who you talk to, and they'll just casually say, man, if I couldn't act, I'd probably die. You know what I'm saying? Or, man, if I couldn't act, I wouldn't even be. I would just end it all, you know. Well, here it was, like, this thing happened, and it was like, you can't act. You know what I'm saying? So it definitely, there were moments where it was just like, what am I going to do if I can't act? Like, well, I don't need to be here. You know what I'm saying? But like I said, number one, my family, my loved ones, you know, how important they are to me. And also, they were so supportive to me that it just made it like, why would I, you know, I have to keep going. You know, it's too much love.
So you're at a space where you feel like, if I can't act, then what else is there?
Yeah.
What made you said you're at a point where you contemplated suicide.
Oh, yeah.
How far did that get in your mind? Did you actually make any attempts? Or no. Was it just kind of like, I just don't really want to be here?
It was no attempts. It was kind of like, you know, I think with people who deal with suicide, it's, you're just sick of living. You're just like, if life is just going to beat me up and just, you know, I have to now not drive anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, now I'm, like, I have a handicap or something like that. Like, what? What kind of life is that? Like, how am I going to make it through that? Let me just get this over with and come back and try again.
Yeah, I hear you, or whatever. Yeah.
But, like I said, everybody has to go through something. And people are making it through every single day. People get through something that they didn't think they could.
So what stopped your suicidal thoughts? What was that point?
I'll say this. My mother is incredible. And, you know, first I thought that, you know, she's Jamaican, and, you know, I just thought she was going to be, oh, Lord, no. but she wasn't. She was more like, okay, all right, let's go. I'm going to be with you, lock in step, every bit of the way. Let's go. If this is it, come on. And I expressed to her, like, you know, Mom, like, I've had, like, suicidal thoughts. And she was like, I know. She said, I know. I expect that you would.
Wow.
She was like, but just know.
She's like, but don't do that.
No. That is not an option.
Yeah.
So don't even think about even trying, because I'll find a way to get you back.
Exactly. That's mamas for you. I feel like that's Black mamas. They be like, okay, I will slap you into next week. I will go to next week, and I will time travel back, and I will slap you again into the next century, and don't make me come get you in the next century. For you better come back here.
For real.
I'm like, dang, mama, okay. But that's all love.
It is. It is.
It's so much love.
Mm-hmm.
And so would you say then that it is someone who is able to see past your kind of point of vision, and they're able to see something in you and say, you know what? I'm not about to let you slide. I'm not about to let you fall by the wayside.
Yes. Yes.
And so, I don't want to.
No, it is. But it's also in the person.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, there are always, I mean, look at suicide. There are 800,000 suicides every year. That's roughly one suicide every 40 seconds.
So, oh my God.
Yeah. So, like, this whole experience made me so passionate about it that I wanted to do more for people who don't make it past that point or past that thought.
Yeah.
And I totally get why you would think to end your life, but you have to be more interested in seeing it all the way through, because if you make it through, it's going to be so much better. It's going to be so much better than anything you could have imagined, you know.
But then it also goes back to what you said about your own life and your own experience when you said, well, I see where I am now, and I kind of just want to play it out to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing about stories. You think about acting, you think about scripts, when you think about films, it's like you have that moment in the film where it's just like, and nothing else good can come from this.
Yep.
We're down. Nobody can get out of this hole. Like, you know, they're going to get us and we're going to die, you know?
Yeah.
And then something miraculous happens.
Yep.
Just sometimes when you're just like, okay, so there's nothing else that I can do in this moment.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a very powerful clip that Oprah had done when she talked about her experience with The Color Purple.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just saying, like, how she had she had basically like manifested the audition because she was so like in love with The Color Purple.
Yeah.
And she got in there and she auditioned. Like, that was huge. And then she didn't hear anything.
Yep.
This is the thing, you know, in her mind, this was like the thing that I want the most in the world at this moment.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, maybe I'm too, you know, maybe I'm overweight and that's why they don't want me, you know, to have the role. Okay. So she said she went to, she called it a fat farm. She said she went there and she tried to lose the weight. And she was just, you know, all the emotions are coming and she just feels like this is just not going to happen for her. And then she got to the moment of like just complete surrender.
Yeah.
Where it's like you've done all that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
You've tried. You've cried. You've been angry. You've been frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
You've been numb. So at that point, you then just kind of say, you know, and for her, she said that she just started singing, I Surrender All.
Yeah.
And in that moment, she just kind of took her hands off the wheel, so to speak, and said, if, you know, if it's not for me to have, then whoever gets it, you know, I'm just going to have to be okay with that and I'm going to support them. And it just was really profound, you know, because we all know that like in that moment, like the next few moments, she's like, then I get a call from Steven Spielberg, like you've got the part.
Yeah.
But in life, we don't, she can tell that story now, but when you're in that space, when you have that diagnosis, when you have this, you know, situation happen, you don't know the other side of it. Like, you just, there's just an element of like not knowing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sometimes we don't want to live in that. That's in my experience. You don't want to live in the not knowing. You want to know.
Right.
I want to know. What is going on the next couple months? That's going on next year. What's going on with this situation? You want to know.
Yeah, you do. But the wanting to know is, it's a veil over what is happening in reality. Because in reality, for Oprah, that was going to come to her regardless, you know.
As in something great was going to come to her.
Something great, or it could be The Color Purple. Mm-hmm. She could have probably walked in. Steven Spielberg probably wanted her before she ever even walked in the door, you know.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. Look at you going all the way deep with it. Okay, wait now. So the idea being that the concept of that which you're seeking is seeking you.
Yes.
And sometimes it gets to a point where it's like you want it, just because you don't see it immediately as soon as you say it or whatever doesn't mean it's not happening.
Right. But remember that you want it.
Yeah. So sometimes people forget that. And they're okay, you better say it. Yes. But that's true. And whenever I do workshops and things like that, like one of the things that I talk about is, what is your dream? Like, what do you want?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when people have a certain situation happen, if MS happens, if, you know, kidney failure happens, if, you know, a burn happens.
Yeah.
You get to that point where you just completely forget, like you kind of lose who you are for a second. You're just like, I just want this away because obviously this is not part of the plan. And for me, you know, just in my own experience, you know, I was a year and a half when it happened. Mm-hmm. So by the time I got to a place, like I'd never known my life, you know, without the scar, without the burn. But when you get to a place, you're like, So I look different than that. This is in the way because that's normal. And you lose sight. Because for me, I was in the hallway mirrors when I was 4 years old. Like 4 years old, 8 years old, whatever. It's like singing to Tina Turner and dancing and all these things and have my little hairbrush and all of that. And I wanted to do that. I wanted to be on stage. I wanted to do all this in front of people. And because I had the scar,
yeah,
I lost sight of what I really wanted because I thought the scar was bigger than my ultimate desire. And so it was bigger than what in my vision.
It's a part of it.
Yeah. So what happens is, oh, look at you. So the idea is you have this situation that has happened in your life. Mm-hmm. And then you're just like, you know what? Let me rewrite the script a little bit. Because now I thought that my script was supposed to be me, you know, no scar, like, oh, I'm in front of people, look at me, scarless and cute and whatever. But that wasn't it. It was like, no, you go be in front of people with the scars and all.
Yeah.
And you rock that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you make it that is your vision now.
Yeah. I think first, you know, you have to always ask yourself, what is it that I'm afraid of? What do I have fear of? Because fear is the opposite of strength, of prosperity, of getting what it is that you want. So if there's fear, then you have to go through it and you have to see it for what it is.
Yeah.
You know, false evidence appearing real. It's just a veil and you have to go through it.
So in your situation, you would say the MS is a veil that could make me possibly think that I'm not going to act and do what I absolutely love to do and what brings me joy and lights me up.
Right. And anytime you spot moments like that or things like that in your life, go towards them, go through them, because what's on the other side of that is bigger. That's the gold. That's what everybody is after.
Yeah. You're so right. And that is what I mean when I talk about how to turn your scars into your superpower.
Yeah.
Is because if I didn't have the scar, I could very well have just been like a chick that doesn't have a physical scar, but she has some sort of other insecurity,
right?
Or some sort of whatever else. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it could have been something else.
Yeah.
So the idea is like, okay, embrace.
Yeah.
What it is, whatever is going on at the moment, and then use that.
You know, it's such narcissism. Like, you know, you hear people who they might not get something that they want or something happens. You know, say you're a young college student and you're looking for a job and you listen to them. I'll never get a job. It'll never happen. Or, you know, you get somebody who's, you know, wants to do a sport or acting. I'll never get this audition. It'll never happen to me. I'll never be an actor. But you look out in the world and there are all these people with jobs and there are all these actors who are doing it. It's narcissism to think like it's never going to happen to me.
That it can never happen for you.
You know,
yeah.
Why you? Why wouldn't it ever happen to you? Or why do bad things only happen to you because you're that special? You were just made, like, you know.
But it's interesting to even state it like that, the concept of it being like narcissism.
It is.
Because it's almost like, well, why do you feel like you know
Right.
When you don't know.
Exactly.
So you, if you don't really know, the only thing you really know is like what's literally kind of happening right here in the next like half second, maybe.
Yeah.
But you don't know. So if you really don't actually know, then why not go for it?
Why not go for it?
Why not actually hold on to the dream? Yeah. Why not go hard and be like, you know what? I don't know.
That's it.
And
you
that's,
know?
Yeah.
Why, you know, we present ourselves like we are these grand augurs, you know. Who...
See, there you go with another word that I'm like, you know, context clues, Audra. Context clues. It's fine. It's fine. I see what you're doing.
Prophets. We are these
okay.
grand prophets.
There we go. Yeah, a little bit of a translation here. Thank you for keeping me abreast of what's happening.
Right. And, you know, we know how things are ultimately going to end up, but we don't know. So you might as well just go for it, you know.
I love it.
It's like that scene in Fight Club where Brad Pitt tells Ed Norton, let go of the wheel. Like, you think like you're in control. Let go of the wheel. Like, stop trying to hold on to everything. Just let go, you know.
Dag nabbit. That's also one of my other words that I say.
Nabbit.
Dag nabbit. That's a whole thing. Shenanigans and dag nabbit. I say those words, no judgment, please.
Not at all. Not at all.
But it's true. Wow. It's true. It's like, you know what? At the end of the day, you know what your dream is. You don't know anything outside of that, even whatever happens, you don't know that you can't have what you want.
That's right. Yeah.
That's right. So let's, you know, we're not going, you don't have to figure out how it's going to get to you, but it's going to get to you and it's going to happen for you.
Yeah, I'm telling you. I like, before coming, I was watching the, like I told you, I was watching the women's 200 meter world championship. And I'm just looking at them before the race starts, and they're kind of looking down the track, and they're kind of, or they're looking down, and you can tell they're telling themselves, like, but what if I win? You know, I'm gonna win. You know, if I didn't think I was gonna win, I wouldn't be.
You wouldn't be. Okay, really quick, I have to just say this. You're so right. Because in my own experience, I've just, you know, I've definitely. Creative setbacks, and why am I even doing this? What am I here for? Like, trying to figure me out on so many levels. I've had that experience. And what I, one day it hit me. It was like, Audra, okay, you're frustrated that things aren't going the way you wanted them to go, but Audra, why haven't you let yourself go?
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, what I mean by that is, why haven't you just, you know, gained 150 pounds, just moved back to wherever you want to go and just completely given up and just go live under a rock somewhere? Like, why aren't you doing that?
Because you know.
Exactly. And it's so interesting. Like, we literally will get up in the morning, we'll go through our day, we'll go to a job that we may be frustrated with and don't want to go to. We, you know, work all day, come back home, work on our craft, whatever this is, work on our dream, whatever that is. And then you get up in the morning, you go to bed, get up in the morning and do it the next day. And then we're like, it's not going to happen for me. You know what I'm saying? Like, right. You've done all of this work and you're not even like, for real, you're not really thinking about quitting. Not for real, because you haven't moved. You still paying this high freaking rent out here and have a roommate that you like, okay, I'm 45. I don't want a roommate. But you have this thing in your head, in your mind, in your heart that you won't, you just can't really let go of. And so I had to ask, like, why haven't you given up, Audra? Give up. And then somebody tells you, if somebody told you to give up, you'll be ready to fight.
Yeah.
Excuse me? Give up? Who do you think you are to come in, you know?
That's right.
But then we tell ourselves it's not going to work. Right. But we're literally not even operating in it's not going to work. We're just saying it to ourselves.
That's why, man, we can get so deep with this, but that's why, you know, when you listen to sermons or these self-help books that talk about manifestation, you know, or that somehow if you do something that will get you your result or get you what you want, and it's total BS, because it's like, it'll come to you just because you want it. If you pursue it, it'll come, you know. Mm-hmm. There's no work. Try not doing anything and watch how many things come to you just by being, just because you're here, you know. Mm-hmm. Whatever your will is. LeBron James, like, he can say, you know, this is what I want. It's the way it is because I worked hard for this. No, you were just doing what it is that you were brought here to do, you know. And I'm sure if, you know, if it was really that much work, he would have quit it a long time ago. That's what he loves to do. Yeah. And because he's operating.
He was equipped to do it because he's not 5'3".
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's the element of being built for it. It's the element of. Yeah, it's like if it's in you, it's gonna come to you eventually. Not saying that you can't do anything. Of course, you can go take your acting classes or do whatever.
Yeah.
But just don't constantly say to yourself, it's not gonna happen. It's like,
right.
Yeah. Like, so what would you say to people like that have had a particular setback? You know, I know we've said a whole lot, but what would you say to somebody, like, in a nutshell? They're like, look, it's time to go. I don't know. All of that. What would you say to them?
I would say make a choice. You know, I'm not going to tell you to keep going. If you say you want to give up, make a choice, move on. Don't sit in the stage where you're waffling, like, you know, maybe I should stay, maybe I should go. Anything you do, whether it's a profession, whether it's a relationship, make a choice. You know, if you're going to stick it out and you're going to be in it. Be present in it. But if you're going to go and you want to throw in the towel, but then, you know, move on with your life on to the next thing.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because either way it turns out, it's going to be good. Either way, there's no way to fail at this. There's no way to get it wrong. Whatever you choose, it'll be good and you will be happy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah,
I like that a whole lot. Well, first, thank you so much for sharing your story and for sharing your wisdom.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So where can people find you? Yes.
My Instagram is Scott St. Patrick. ScottPatrick.
All right.
Yeah. That's Instagram is always a
okay.
917.
Ah, you're so silly. And here's what I will say. You can also find him, because when he was like lying about like working out and stuff, like you can see him on there like bench pressing actual human beings. Like, no. Like, no, he's just cars and stuff. But yes, so thank you so much. And I'm excited to see how your story unfolds as well. I already know. I already know it's about to be super dope. So I'm excited for you.
I appreciate it. And, you know, like minds, have a special place in my heart for you, Audra. And I think what you're doing is phenomenal. And I will always be here anytime you want to collaborate or do whatever. I'm here.
All right now.